Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to the Green Egg Radio Hour. I'm Ariel Montserrat.
And I'm Sylvie Salou.
Our special guest tonight is Karen Tate, an independent scholar, speaker, radio show host, published author, and sacred tour organizer. Karen's body of work blends her experiences of women-centered multiculturalism evident in archaeology, anthropology, and mythology with her unique academic and literary talents and travel experience throughout the world. Her first book, Sacred Places of Goddess, 108 Destinations, has garnered prestigious endorsements, while her second book, Walking an Ancient Path, Rebirthing Goddess on Planet Earth, was a finalist in the National Best Books of 2008 awards. Tate's work has been highlighted in the LA Times, Seattle Times, and other major newspapers. She is interviewed regularly in print, on television, and on National Public Radio, and hosts her own radio show, Voices of the Sacred Feminine, considered a treasure trove of insight and wisdom for our time. Her work has segued into writing, producing, and consulting on projects which can bring the ideals and awareness of the sacred feminine into the mainstream world through television and film.
Karen spends much of her time giving interviews, teaching, and lecturing at private and public educational and spiritual institutions, temples and churches such as Joseph Campbell Roundtables, the Gaia Festival, Loyola Marymount College, and the American Academy of Religion, Westcor. She is a speaker with the Center for Partnership Studies, founded by Rianne Eisler, on the board of Gaia Fest and an associate with the Joseph Campbell Foundation. She has received acclaim for reviving the Cakes for the Queen of Heaven curriculum taught at the Goddess Temple of Orange County, and will soon start teaching the Rise Up and Call Her Name course.
Her published articles have appeared in both domestic and international publications since 1995. She's on the editorial board of the journal Goddess Theology and a founding board of directors member of the Institute for Theology and Theosophy. She is currently a contributing writer to Sacred History Magazine, Mystic Pop, Circle News, the Beltane Papers, and also Green Egg, and other domestic and international print and online magazines. Karen is a contributing writer to the recently published books Heart of a Woman in Business and Waters of Life, as well as the soon-to-be-published books How to Speak Goddess and Jesus Through Pagan Eyes. Well, actually, Jesus Through Pagan Eyes has just been published. So, she is a member of the International Women's Writing Guild and the LA Women's and Goddess Spirituality columnist for The Examiner. Sacred tours she has led and organized have itineraries that circle the globe, and she continues bringing the like-minded to sacred sites to experience the joy of purposeful travel.
An ordained minister, independent scholar of the sacred feminine, and graduate of the Women's Theological Institute, specializing in goddess and women's spirituality, Karen's particular emphasis is on the roles of women and the study of comparative religions and ancient cultures in a modern or reconstructed context. It's no surprise that she is the founder of the educational, art, and cultural organization, the Isis Ancient Cultures Society, which organized public events around Los Angeles for more than 10 years. With this deep well of experience and rich tapestry of scholarship fueling her passions, Karen has transitioned to the next level in her career as a writer, producer, a creative consultant on projects introducing ideals and awareness of the sacred feminine to the mainstream world. Recognizing the importance of the vital and vibrant vehicle that is television and film, Karen uses this new canvas to responsibly influence contemporary thought geared toward life-affirming mythology that encourages discussion and raises awareness, the goal of mythologists of the new millennium.
Karen's insatiable curiosity, scholastic achievements, and special interests helped define her focus of building bridges between cultural and spiritual communities and promoting ideals of partnership, inclusivity, compassion, and continuing education.
An ADAPTA within the International Fellowship of ISIS, Karen was ordained by one of the founders, Lady Olivia Robertson, at Clonegal Castle in Ireland. I hope I pronounced that right. More than a decade ago, the author began the Isium of Isis Navigatum, a hearth of goddess within the FOI, which continues to fulfill her calling to help midwife the rebirth of the divine feminine in contemporary society.
Karen and her husband Roy, her life partner for more than 20 years, are the creators, artists, and caretakers of the Isis Temple of Thanksgiving and Sekhmet's Mountain Grotto. Karen was nominated for the Pagan Pride Day 2006 Community Service Award. And welcome, Karen. Are you there?
I sure am. Wow. You ladies just proved to me I need to really shorten that bio on my website.
Well, I don't know how you would. You have accomplished so much, and it's really, you know, it's really great, I think, for the community to know about all of this.
Yes.
Oh, well, thank you. I guess I'm modest. I guess I felt embarrassed hearing you read all of that, but thank you. Thank you. That was a very, very generous introduction. Thank you, ladies.
Mm-hmm. You're quite welcome.
Yeah.
Well, Karen, I guess we're going to get right to some questions for you. Tell me, why does the mainstream world not acknowledge the feminine face of God?
Well, you know, I guess some people might say, gee, it's a conspiracy. But, you know, I think it was at least a strategy. If you go back and, you know, you stop and you think that mythology influences our society, our culture, our religion, well, the mythology of the sacred feminine was swept beneath the rug. There's this rich tapestry of goddess mythology out there. In fact, I'm in the process of, you know, maybe doing some writing on that pretty soon and putting it out as a book. But, you know, and it really tells us ideals to live by. But what happened was, you know, and there are a lot of different ideas about how the sacred feminine became swept, you know, beneath the rug, but it did. And patriarchy takes hold, you know, the rule of the father god, the authoritarian father. And when you have a father god as your mythology, then you have a society where men are the authorities. And then by association, you have, you know, the female gender is diminished. And that's what we see in our culture today. We see this imbalance between the sacred feminine and the divine masculine. You know, for the last several thousand years, it's been all about the masculine. And that has sort of, you know, sent us, you know, in this downward spiral where we miss all the attributes of the feminine that sort of counter or complement the masculine. And by association, it's greatly affected the status of women around the world as well.
Mm, absolutely. We can see that.
Yeah, I mean, you look around, and I mean, everything from, it just in the news, some of your listeners may have been following it the last few weeks, the woman in India who was gang raped with a pipe so bad that they had to, you know, remove her intestines, and she was then thrown off of a moving vehicle and almost rolled over. She passed away. Well, in northern India, as well as in places like China, female babies are not they're not wanted as much as male babies, because female babies mean that when the woman grows up, well, in order to marry her off, the family has to pay a dowry. So female babies cost families money, and if you're a poor family, that's a big consideration. While on the other hand, if you have sons, when he gets married, you know, his wife's family has to provide a dowry coming into the marriage. So this infanticide that happens, this killing of babies, of female babies in northern India and in China, well, it's resulted in this skewed number of male and female babies. They're getting to the point where they're really having fewer and fewer female babies in these countries. And the symptoms are things like this rape of this woman, you know, because in many cases there aren't enough women. And if you're a poor man and you don't have a lot to offer, well, you know, you might not be able to get a wife. It's a complicated subject, but that's just part of it. You know, other aspects that affect us here, you know, in the United States would be, you know, women don't have pay equality. Believe it, you know, we just got finished going through the presidential election, and there's, you know, some political parties and religious organizations out there that believe they can still control women's access to contraception or abortion, even though, you know, it's protected by law. Mm-hmm. We only have, you know, 17 to 20% leadership of women in academia, in religion, in politics. So the female has been diminished in all of these ways, and these are just some aspects of how that then ends up being reflected in our everyday life and how things are done in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's interesting you brought up the election, because that to me was just such a bellwether, because we had five GOP congressional candidates who made absolutely, I mean, just ridiculously ignorant, idiotic comments regarding women's reproductive rights. And every single one of them was slammed down. They didn't get elected, and they lost by a wide margin, which I was glad to see. But you know, every day I'd open up the news and read it, and this is before the election, and I'm 58 years old, and I felt like I was living back before women's lib again, you know? It's like I fought that fight already. Why do I have to do this again?
Well, you know, I've been hearing from people, and, you know, wiser than me, and I hope they're right, that the reason this is rearing its ugly head again, this insanity, this ignorance, is maybe it's the last gasp of patriarchy, you know.
Yes.
See women on the rise around the world, even though we're far from achieving equality. You have authors like Hannah Rosen, who has a book out called The End of Men, and she doesn't mean the end of men, that we don't need or want men anymore. She's talking about the end of male dominance, and she cites all these statistics that show that women are actually starting to get, you know, they're becoming more elevated in society. You know, they are, more women are graduating from college. They're making more money. They don't have to be so dependent on men. That's very scary, I think, for some men. You know, they have sort of had control for so long, and I think they feel control slipping away. So, especially these extremist types, you know, like we saw on the Republican Party, you know, they're feeling that, you know, they can't control their families, they can't control women like they used to, so they're doing whatever they can to you know, try to reinstate those you know, those barbaric and archaic measures. But you know, the fight's not over. I mean, the day after the election, you know, Republican-controlled Congresses across the United States were back at it with the same sort of legislation, you know, against contraception, against Planned Parenthood. So, you know, the election meant nothing to a lot of these people. They are still out there pushing that agenda.
Yes, until, yeah. I believe, until 2014, they're going to do all the damage they can do. I was reading a recent story about the state of Georgia, you know, concerning reproduction. They have passed a law that if a doctor even suspects that you have miscarried, you have to prove that there is no human intervention in that. And if you can't prove it, you can spend life in prison or face the death penalty.
And how do you prove a negative, you know?
Mm. Exactly.
Well, it really, it's discrimination, isn't it? I mean,
oh, yeah.
there's There's so many double standards in this, you know, male-female, I hate to call it, it's a cultural war, it's a religious war, it's a gender war, in a sense, between some people, not all. I mean, you know, we have a lot of progressive men who don't think this craziness, you know, but I think it goes back to ignorance, because the very thought that these men who are in office, or these bishops, we saw all the bishops lining up to, you know, to speak out against contraception. The very thought that these men totally ignore the economic advantages of having women being able to control their reproductive health. It affects people's families. It affects a woman's ability to get a job, get an education, all of this. And they totally, you know, shut off to that, including, I mean, those crazy ideas about legitimate rape. They really thought that, if a woman didn't really want that penetration, her body would certainly be able to prevent herself, prevent it from becoming pregnant. I mean, how absurd. And that just goes to show you these people have been living in this bubble where sex education is so taboo, they can go all of their lives till they're 40, 50, 60 years old, and they're in the halls of Congress, and these ignorant men are making decisions about women's lives. It's unconscionable. You know?
Exactly.
And the good news is that I remember reading, and it was a year ago almost to the day, that there was an astrological alignment. And it was during an eclipse, and what it signaled was the return of the sacred feminine, and that women will be the ones that are going to initiate the many changes that are supposed to be coming our way. And
I think so. You look at the Egyptian spring, word had it that actually was born in the living room of a woman, you know, that grassroots movement. You have women all over India are up in arms by the millions about this woman's rape. You go all around the globe, and more women are being elected as prime minister, as president, of their country. I mean, we have so far to go, but you can see progress, even here in the United States. I mean, Christianity may have a hold, the type of Christianity that supports this regression, but I'm not sure these people are really in the majority. I think they're just the loud minority. And we saw what happened with the election. Women said no. You know, women came out in droves and voted against going backwards. So, yeah, I think it is shifting that way. It's just not happening fast enough, I guess.
We'd like for it to happen a little bit faster, yeah.
Yeah.
So did you want to talk about any other problems that happen when we deny?
Just to sort of connect the dots. I mean, you know, I've heard people say, well, what does it matter we don't have, that we don't revere goddess in our everyday lives in the mainstream world? Well, what they don't realize is, again, like I said, you know, women become subservient. And when women become subservient, then you have things like domestic violence. People can get away with, you see so many, just this idea of rape. Men don't take it real seriously in a lot of different, parts of the world, or even parts of the country. You find that women can still be responsible for men who can't control their libido, so they end up in burkas. I mean, there's so many different things. There's female genital mutilation that still goes on, even here in the United States, where a woman's vagina, her clitoris, is literally cut out so she doesn't enjoy sex.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really a horrible thing. If you've never heard of it, I would really encourage women and men to Google FGM, or female genital mutilation. It's barbaric.
It is.
There's all of these different sorts of things that go on in society. The inequality in the workforce, the limitations that put on women in different religions in different parts of society. Women can't be ordained as priests. There's just an assortment of things where you see women don't have equality, and it really does go back to this idea that if you don't have a feminine face of God, then women aren't seen as equal. So if they're not seen as equal, then it's almost as if men are given license to do the things that they do. Patriarchy takes hold. We have the four pillars of patriarchy. You have sexism, you have racism, you have environmental exploitation, and I'm trying to think of what the fourth one is, and I can't remember off the top of my head. But, these things happen to oppress the other. And if you're not white and you're not male and you're not Christian particularly, then you're not held in the highest regard, because it's white male Christians who are held in the highest regard in the West.
Go ahead, Sylvie.
Oh, I didn't say anything.
Oh, I'm sorry that you said. What do you think, Karen, about how much this I don't know if I can say resurgence, but we've had a growing uber right-wing Christian fundamentalist, religions have been growing since the early 1970s. And they really want women to stay home and not work and be under the thumb of a man. You've probably heard of the Quiverful movement.
I've interviewed a woman who escaped the Quiverful movement on my radio show, and it's pretty scary. She came out and said, look, this is about racism and it's about sexism, because they want to keep women home, excuse the expression, because it sounds ugly, but I think what they do is ugly. They want to keep women home popping out babies because they really are afraid of the demographics that are changing in the country. Mm-hmm. Fewer and fewer people are becoming Christians. We have brown skinned people that are going to, soon in a few decades are going to outnumber white skinned people. They are fearful of anything that's not like them. So if you're not Christian, they're very afraid. Sarah Palin's church was at war with the Queen of Heaven. Well, what's the Queen of Heaven? The Queen of Heaven is the goddess.
Yeah.
So, we saw all of this, uproar, this anti-Muslim sentiment in the country. And I would say to pagans, we have to be really on top of promoting religious tolerance, because if these extreme right-wing people get too much control, get too much influence, it won't just be Muslims who are being singled out as, the thing to be afraid of. It's going to be pagans too. Anybody who's not Christian, you could get into that whole discussion about conservatives versus liberals, and the amygdala in their brain is really different. They really are wired differently. The amygdala in the brain, causes them to be a lot more fear-based.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I found that. I grew up in a staunchly uber Republican household, and there was a lot of, it was just the constant fear that was going on.
I mean, you turn on the TV, you got Glenn Beck saying it's the end of the world. You got all of these TV shows about, they're getting ready with their guns and their bullets and their underground bunkers. And, in a way, I feel sorry for them, that they're living in such a fearful mindset.
Yeah.
But that doesn't help move us forward, When you consider our thoughts are things, our thoughts create our reality. They are creating their reality with from this fear. And then on the other hand, you have liberals, I think, who are so much more live and let live. We're so much more open to new ideas and different ways of thinking. We're trying to create that reality while they're trying to create this other reality. I mean, is there any wonder it's so hard to find common ground?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Karen, I'd like to ask you kind of a twofold question. I mean, first of all, you know, I'd like to know about the values of the sacred feminine. And within that, speaking of liberals and sort of on the in the political realm, concerning pagans, what is the best way to stand up and be heard, you know, sort of fight but not, you know, physical fighting? Because I don't talk with a lot of people who think that, you know, it's better to be passive rather than to stand up and make waves. And, I mean, personally, I think we need to, you know, get our claws into some things and hang on.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, I agree with you. You know, I mean, you don't have to be a bully and you don't have to be aggressive, you know, to be assertive and stand up for your beliefs. And it's really actually, it's funny that you should ask me that question, and I wish I could remember the name of the scientist, but again, you know, I get a chance to talk to so many interesting people on my radio show. I was interviewing Donna Hennis just last week about a blog article she wrote, and she cited some scholar or doctor who showed statistics about why it's so much more healthy to speak out and to speak up and be an activist. And I think we do have to be activists, because otherwise it's that loud minority who rules the day, you know. And the day can't be ruled by the loud minority, especially if they're the ones that aren't even working from facts. You know, I think we have to first educate ourselves so that we know what we're talking about. And we have to find ways to share that information, whether it just be with our friends and family or like you're doing with your radio show. You know, you can write articles, give presentations, sponsor book clubs, you know, get together in your community and choose books that will maybe raise people's awareness and you know, talk about them. There's all sorts of things you can do to be an activist. You know, write letters to your congresspeople. Make sure you sign online petitions. Go volunteer at political offices. Donate if you have money to, you know, spare. Send an extra $5 or $10 to Planned Parenthood if you can. I think we have to find the like-minded, you know, find people who think like us, whether they're pagans or goddess advocates or feminists or progressive Christians, and find a way to rally together. To sort of join forces, because I really do think there are more of us than there are of them. It's just we're not speaking out, and they're screaming. You know, they're screaming at the top of their lungs.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is one problem that I've seen. Of course, I've managed the Pinnacle Project on Facebook, and it's open to, you know, everyone, regardless of who they are, or what religion, or what have you. But I have pagans come in that, you know, if you run a story such as you were talking about, the Quiverful and things like that, I mean, they really get upset and say, well, you're harassing these people. You're just spreading hatred and things like that. But
that's not true. Well, I mean, I think you have to say to them, no, I'm not spreading hatred. I'm just shedding light on what they do and what they think. If the organization is such that it's negative or hateful itself, well, you're not spreading hate by letting people know that they're out there and what they're doing. I mean, that Quiverful movement, for instance, I mean, and that's just one of them. The woman I interviewed told me, she said that they actually tell women who are becoming older and are getting to the point in their life where, to have a child would be dangerous. They say, well, if you die, then you're a martyr for the cause. I mean, these, you know, we really have to use critical thinking ourselves, and sometimes it requires being brave. I mean, I got in trouble from some people when I posted the video and the article that that I wrote called "Goddess is a Democrat." Well, that was sort of the mainstream title. It was really eco-feminist spirituality for a sustainable future, but that's too much of a mouthful. So I just used shorthand, and I started saying Goddess was a Democrat, because the reality is Goddess ideals are so much closer to the ideas that are in the Democratic platform.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you would never really, I mean, if pagans were to connect the dots between spirituality and politics, I really don't think a pagan can be a Republican in earnest any more than a Jew could be a Nazi. And that's a quote from another pagan that I highly respect. His name is Gus de Zerega. He writes for Pantheos. And when I saw that he wrote that, I said, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
And I mean, pagans would be environmentalists. You know, they would be promoting tolerance in religion. They would be promoting women's rights. And just on those things alone, how can you vote Republican if you care about the environment and if you care about women's rights? At least the Republicans that are, you know, I'm not talking about moderate Republicans, you know, the Republicans of 20 years ago. The Republicans of today, you know, how can you support them and still be a pagan and claim to be someone who reveres the earth, you know, and reveres the goddess? Do you think in your wildest dreams goddess would be for, you know, the marginalization of women? Give me a break, you know.
Exactly.
So it's just they're not thinking it through, you know, or they don't care. You know, they don't want to connect the dots because for whatever reason, they want their politics to be what it is, and they don't think the two have to be in sync.
I get the feeling at times, you know, in conversations with Republican pagans, that they dance around what their actual motivation is, but I believe it has to do with income and having to pay taxes and things like that. And, you know, I know everyone needs money, and, you know, I would rather have more than what I do have, but I guess I'm geared toward caring for people and caring for the environment more than, you know, filling my pocketbook.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's exactly right. You know, it feels like to me the other side is all about money, and it doesn't matter if they exploit workers to make money or if they exploit the environment to make money, because the ultimate goal is making money. You know, where the other side, we have different values. You know, if it weren't for liberals, we wouldn't enjoy so many of the rights we do have in the workplace that are disappearing. You know, if it wasn't for liberals, I mean, we wouldn't have Social Security and Medicare. I mean, we're having the battle right now. The Republicans want to take away Social Security and Medicare. I would challenge those Republican pagans and say, so, do you want to get rid of, Social Security and Medicare? Do you not want to have unemployment insurance? Do you not want to have vacations at your job? Do you not want to make overtime? You know, and just go down the laundry list of things that could disappear if corporations, which is who the Republican Party is for, you know, if corporations totally had free reign, you know, that's the kind of world we would live in. And I don't think, I honestly think it's ignorance, because I don't think they really know what could potentially happen if America turned even more into a country where corporations, you know, had even more free reign than what they do. I just don't think they understand. They fall for those lines on Fox News, the makers and the takers and the job creators, you know, because they don't hear the statistics about these corporations are not creating jobs, at least not here in America. They're overseas.
They listen to these clever little sound bites that don't tell us anything. And you can tell because then they repeat them all over the place in comments and everything. Anyway, we need to take a break right now, and we're going to play a little, and then we'll be right back. And we invite you to call into the show if you have any questions or comments. And that number is 718-664-6436. And our song we're going to play right now is by Incubus Succubus. And Sylvie, I think you have the title.
It is The Goddess Chant.
Well, how appropriate. Well, I don't...
It's quiet.
It's coming.
There we go. On the show, and that was Incubus Succubus, The Goddess Chant. And once more, that phone number that we invite you to call in is 718-664-6436. So now we're with Karen Tate here. We're discussing the sacred feminine, and we were talking a little bit about connecting the dots between spirituality and politics. And Karen, did you have anything else to say about that?
Well, you know, I guess I would just punctuate that if you're hearing this for the first time, to really maybe think about it, you know, because I think it is important. If you care about sexism, if you care about racism, if you care about the environment, then you really need to look at the political party who's more in sync with your values, and do what you can to support them. Because, you know, politics isn't fun. I can remember a time when I thought it was the most boring thing in the world. But it's really important that we get involved, that we know what's going on, that we are activists if we can be activists, if we at least know what's happening, so we cast our vote intelligently, because, you know, these are people who are shaping our future and our children's future. And as pagans, or goddess advocates, I would hope that we are standing up and supporting the party that's going to protect the earth, that's going to protect women, you know, that are going to, you know, uplift the world, not, you know, turn it over to multinational corporations and further inhibit our, you know, our freedoms and our rights
And I mean, because we talk about, for instance, family values, you know. I know the right and conservatives are always demonizing Europe, like Europe is this horrible place.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, Europe, they aren't, you know, Christianity doesn't have Europe by a stranglehold like it does to a certain extent here in the United States with all the evangelicals. And in countries like Scandinavia, in those Scandinavian countries, I'm trying to say, you know, they really do have family values, not this lip service that, you know, they pretend to have here. I mean, when a family has a baby, the husband and wife are expected in the first year of the child's life to take a year off of work. You know, they each can take 6 months off. You know, you have the 40% solution where after the government has paid for your education, okay, let me stress that, instead of like here in the United States where to get a decent education you come out of school and you owe the size of a mortgage to pay back your student loans. After the government has paid for your education, the 40% solution ensures that women will get leadership positions in the boardrooms, in corporations. We haven't even gotten into health care, you know. I mean, there's so many things that are so much better in Europe. And, you know, we just need to, you know, we need to be focused on things to make the quality of life better for our people, not make the rich richer. And I don't know, that's just my come from. And I think the spirituality of Goddess is about the needs of the many, not the needs of the few. You know, it's about the, you know, uplifting the have-nots, not giving it all to the haves. So, you know, it's more about equality and more equal distribution than the few at the top having all the benefits and all the money and the rest of us, you know, just little cogs in the wheel, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, exactly so. I remember when I found out that in France both men and women are allowed to take leave when there's a child that's been born. And I think you've got a much healthier society when that's happening.
Well, you know, yeah, you have a healthier emotionally, a healthier physically. I mean, in Europe, they get a month off for vacation, you know. I mean,
every
how
year.
Many people
yeah.
do you know? Yeah, how many people you know don't even get that? I mean,
yeah.
Germany is one of the most progressive countries in terms of worker rights because there's so many employee-owned businesses. So it's not this, you know, like here in the United States where the CEO makes 350 times more than the worker, that, you know, that disparity doesn't exist. You know, Americans are really fooled into thinking the United States is the best. But if they really look at all the statistics and all different sorts of categories, the United States is not anywhere near the top, unless you count all the money we spend on bullets and bombs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're the top producer of military arms, but when you get into the quality of life of Americans, we're far below many, many other countries, even countries in the East, you know, when education,
yeah.
health, quality
yeah.
of life, all of that sort of stuff.
Absolutely. Well, Karen, one thing I wanted to ask you about is, can you tell us about some of the myths of Goddess and what they teach us?
Well, yeah, actually, you know, going back to that sort of idea, you know, the myths are there. I teach a course called Cakes for the Queen of Heaven that the Unitarian Universalist women put out some time ago, but it's still just as relevant today. And I'd highly recommend it to folks out there. Go to your UU churches, ask them to revive that. For instance, the myths of Demeter and Persephone, you know, it talks about how promotes healthy relationships between mothers and daughters. And I like to think, if you extrapolate that further, healthy relationships between women. And we all know that, you know, we could certainly use some improvement in that arena. Are you look at, for instance, the goddess Sedna. She's an Inuit goddess that you find her off the waters of Canada and Newfoundland and Alaska. Her myth, when you get into it, it teaches about environmentalism. It teaches about not being greedy, about only taking what you need, using what you need. You look at the Statue of Liberty, Lady Libertas, Lady Liberty. Well, you know, she's the political goddess for today, and not just for today. There's historical evidence that in Rome they deified virtues, and Liberty had a temple. Lady Libertas had a temple on the Aventine Hill in Rome, and you know, all of these ideas that come with you know, with the Statue of Liberty, you know, liberty, justice, equality, you know, those are or things that that we should be fighting for in our society. And again, you know, when if you connect the dots, if you believe in Lady Liberty, if you believe in that archetype or that even that as a deity, you know, whether whichever way you go, then how can you support people who aren't for you know, justice and equality, whether we're talking about women's rights or gay rights or immigrant rights, you know? So, you know, those are just some ideas. ISIS, for instance, you know, you see ISIS on many carvings on temples, and she, in her hand, she's holding this smaller goddess called Maat, and she's handing it Maat to the pharaoh. Well, what that symbolizes is, first, that the power comes from the female. The power to rule comes mm-hmm. from the female. She is gifting it to the male pharaoh, but she is saying, I give you the power to rule, and you must rule using the laws of Maat, which are truth, fairness, justice. You know, you can go down, you know, down the list. You know, there are a lot of different stories and mythologies that you can, you know, pull out these values and see where it really teaches us what things we should you know, we should embrace and maybe try to live by, while, you know, things like greed, exploitation. I mean, of course, it's just common sense that we shouldn't be for those things. But what I'm trying to say is, you know, it's just like we have the Ten Commandments in Christianity. We can look to the goddess myths. We can look to things that nature teaches us so that we know what our values should be as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So now I'm imagining that you have written about a lot of this in your books, and would you like to tell us more about your books and your radio show?
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, I would. I appreciate that. Well, my first book was Sacred Places of Goddess, 108 Destinations, and I was asked to write that by the publisher of CCC Publishing, who had a travel series, and he knew I had traveled to a number of goddess sites, so he asked me to do the next book in his series, which was Goddess Sites. So that's what I did. I tried to bring awareness of the sacred feminine to the world through the lens of sacred travel. So you can pick up that book whether you really intend to go there or not. It tells you how to get to the places, but if you're just an armchair traveler, you can, you know, you can open up the book and across almost every continent find some of the sacred sites of goddess, but you know there's thousands and thousands, and I have 108. You know, I had to be very selective, you know, from continent to continent, which one I wrote about. So I tried to get the biggest sort of diversity possible there. And so you would find out about not just the sacred place, but about the goddess and her attributes. And, you know, there are other things in it about environmentalism, teaches a little bit about Mary Magdalene and Rianne Leisler's ideas of partnership versus domination. You know, I try to give people a little taste. If they have never heard about goddess before, not only do they learn about her around the world, but they get little snippets of some of the things we believe and think, and, you know, maybe people who were important, and Queen of Sheba, Maria Gimbutas, Mary Magdalene, you know, different, you know, female mm-hmm. characters. Then my second book, well, that one is a lot more experiential. I like to think that somebody could pick that up and have a better idea of how to read a goddess, how to lead a goddess-inspired life. It's divided into the four elements in spirit, and the earth section talks about traveling to sacred places, not the how to get there part, but more the effect of the sacred place on me or the people who traveled with me, just, you know, our experience of the site, much more personal accounts. Then the water section is about doing ritual and emotion. The fire section is about passion and politics. The air section is about inspiration from Goddess and how she inspires us. The spirit section, well, that's about how a person like me who grew up in the Bible Belt could end up being someone called by Goddess and live in the rest of your adult life dedicated to trying to rebirth the sacred feminine in the world. So those are the two books that are out, and they're available at a really deep discount on my website. You can get them both from me for $25, and on my website I have lots of stuff. I have articles I've published and videos. I have a YouTube channel. You can tune in there and hear some of the talks that I've given or some of the interviews that I've given, and then my radio show, Voices of the Sacred Feminine, well, that's also on Blog Talk, and it airs every Wednesday or Thursday night, and it's once a week, and it goes back to 2007. I have archives that are, you know, go back 5 years, and I'm really proud of the people who've been on the show. I've learned so much, and I know my listeners have too. The listenership has quadrupled in the last year, so wow. It's really men and women come on the show, and they talk about all different aspects of Goddess, whether it be a goddess in the heavens or goddess as an archetype or the sacred feminine as ideals, you know, to help us live by. And so it's, you know, just a wide range of topics because the subject's so diverse, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'll never forget years ago, when I lived in California, and of course California likes to think of itself as the most progressive state, and I ran into a woman at a goddess festival, and it was women, and I was talking about the patriarchy and talking about somebody, it was a woman, I can't remember who, being, in my view, patriarchal. And she bristled, and the knives came out, and she, are you aware you're calling a woman patriarchal? Yes, I'm doing this deliberately. Anybody mm-hmm. can practice patriarchal values, men or women.
Absolutely.
Just like anybody can practice goddess values, men or women, you know? And so I really want to, you know, if you're a guy listening in, you know, I don't want you to think that we hate men. That's not the case at all. And
no.
I will fully own that I know a lot of women. And having been raised by an extremely authoritarian father, I had to do my own work to get rid of some of those harsh authoritarian kinds of things and you know, find a gentler way of being in the world. But I see, Margaret Thatcher, I think, was probably a really great example of a patriarchal woman.
Sarah Palin. Michelle Bachmann.
Yeah.
Honestly, take almost any Republican woman and you have patriarchy in a skirt. You know, that's sort of the phrase, patriarchy in a skirt. Then on the other hand, you have men who understand compassion, who understand nurturing, who understand that it's about the we and the us, not the I
mm-hmm.
and the me, you know. I mean, I have an incredible husband. We've been married almost 27 years now. I even dedicated my second book to him. When I would work all day, and I would have to sit up at the computer till sometimes 12, you know, midnight or 2 in the morning to get the book written. I mean, he so supported that. He was washing the clothes and cooking the meals and running the errands. You know, it's a partnership. You know, men who mm-hmm. understand that, you know, they are the men of the future. You know,
yes.
Because and also too, you know, patriarchy has hurt men too. You think about the little boys who, you know, are maybe more sensitive or mm-hmm. maybe who are drawn to the arts and really don't want to play football or, you know, they're just mm-hmm. the creative types. You know, and the football player who can be a good nurturer, for heaven's sakes, you know, who's mm-hmm. a good father who takes care of his children and knows how to be gentle and kind and compassionate and nurturing. Of course men can be that way. And it's going to take more education, you know, for us to get to the point where we don't see nurturing as weakness and authoritarianism as the norm, because authoritarianism can be very brutal. It can be very inflexible, and you know, we need balance, and that's really the key: balance and wholeness and partnership. And you know, the authoritarian way is my way or the highway. And, you know, I'm the only one that has the answers, and it's just one way. And there's no room for, you know, for the nurturing and the flexibility and the new ideas. And, you know, the world is changing. Mm-hmm. And I think it's those patriarchs, those women who are, you know, patriarchs in a skirt, there's still a lot of them out there, but I don't think they're the future. I really don't. I think we're, you know, they're the ones that are going to die away.
Yeah, the dinosaurs, yeah. There was a wonderful book written about 25 years ago, I guess. I can't remember the name of it, but it's written by a guy named Bernie Zilbergeld or some similar thing like that. And his whole point was men are on the verge of what men are destroying themselves, and if they don't turn around and get a new lease on life, there won't be many of them left anymore, because it just won't work in the world.
Well, you know, you're right, and Hannah Rosen, who I mentioned earlier, I'm going back to what she was telling me on my show. She was talking about men have to change and shift with the times too. And she said the ones that are having the most trouble with it are the ones that won't go back and get an education, or the ones that expect mm-hmm. women to stay the same as they were 30 years ago, or mm-hmm. the ones that somehow feel diminished because maybe their wife makes more money than them. You know, they're, you know, the ones that think women aren't women anymore. You know, they're the ones that are really having trouble with all of this, you know,
mm-hmm.
but the men who are kind of going with the flow, you know, I think maybe there's some men who are enjoying this shift. Because imagine the stress and the, mm-hmm. and of having to be the sole provider or the one who has all the responsibility on their shoulders. Well, now women are saying, look, I want to share it with you. I want to be your partner. I would think the men would have take a sigh of relief and go, phew, you know, now I have some help.
Yeah.
Yes.
I hate to cut in, but we're getting a little short on time.
Mm-hmm.
It won't be long till our cue music for the end of the show is gonna hit us. So, Karen, I wanted to, can you tell everyone how they can find your website or how to get in touch with you? And
sure. Absolutely. It's real easy. It's my name. It's KarenTate.com. And you know what? The easiest way to remember that is to think of Sharon Tate, but I'm Karen Tate.
Oh, boy. What a memory.
Yeah, you see, you won't forget that way. So, yeah, just go to my website, and from my website you can email me. You can find out about my books, my radio show, everything.
Okay, audience. Listen, I've been to your website. It is wonderful. There's kinds of wonderful things in there. And, Karen, I want to thank you for being on the show. As always, it was just a real genuine pleasure and a delight. You always have wonderful things to say.
Well, thank you, ladies. I really appreciate the opportunity. It's an honor that you would invite me on and give me a chance to share my thoughts with your listeners. I'm happy to come back anytime.
Oh, okay. That would be wonderful.
Yeah, that is wonderful. So, those of you at home listening in, join us next week when our guest is Merv Sellers, who is an American paranormal, thriller, horror, and mystery writer. Boy, that's a big job. He is best known for his Rowan Gant Investigations series about a practicing witch-turned-occult detective who aids the St. Louis Police Department in solving bizarre crimes. So, that's all for tonight. And that's our show. We'll see you next Thursday. Good night.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, Tom and Aubrey.